Nomoto presents American Presidents, President Ronald Reagan, narrated with Microsoft Azure using the Ava voice. Running time, approximately 16 minutes. If you enjoy this program, explore the rest of our library. Every show is designed to stand alone, but together they form a larger project, a guided tour of the forces, intellectual, emotional, political, technological, that built the world we live in and the world we're about to enter. On a cold January afternoon in 1981, as the temperature hovered below freezing and a sharp winter wind cut across the National Mall, millions of Americans watched a moment that felt like the breaking of a long fever. The country had endured years of inflation, oil shocks, hostage crises, and a grinding sense of decline. Faith in government had sunk to levels unseen since the Great Depression. But now, on the steps of the Capitol, a former Hollywood actor with a warm smile, an easy voice, and a confidence that bordered on serene placed his hand on a Bible and took the oath of office. Ronald Wilson Reagan, Dutch to his childhood friends, the great communicator to many who adore him, became the 40th president of the United States. His very presence seemed to promise a reversal of mood, a return to optimism, strength, and national pride. And then, in one of history's strange symmetries, as Reagan finished his inaugural address, word reached Washington that the American hostages held in Iran for 444 days had been released. It was pure coincidence. Negotiations had occurred in the final days of the Carter administration, but symbolically it felt like the torch passing from malaise to renewal. Reagan had not done anything yet. He had not signed a bill or issued an order. All he had done was step into the role. But somehow, for millions, that seemed enough. To understand how the son of a traveling shoe salesman from small-town Illinois reached that moment and why he became one of the most consequential presidents of the 20th century, one must begin far from the spotlight of Hollywood or the grandeur of Washington. Reagan's early life was shaped not by glamour or privilege, but by instability, wanderings, and the determination of a mother whose quiet faith carried the family through the storms of the Great Depression. Ronald Wilson Reagan was born on February 6, 1911, in an apartment above a small commercial storefront in Tampico, Illinois. His father, Jack Reagan, was Irish-American, charming, funny, talkative, and a man whose career never quite settled and whose drinking often caused chaos. His mother, Nellie Wilson Reagan, was deeply religious, gentle, hardworking, and fiercely devoted to her two sons, Neil and Ronald. She was the emotional anchor of the household, and her faith in the goodness of people and the potential for redemption became a cornerstone of Reagan's worldview. The Reagans moved constantly as Jack searched for steady work. Ronald attended about a dozen schools in his first few years, developing the ability to adapt quickly and make friends easily. He was an avid reader with a vivid imagination, drawn to adventure stories and tales of frontier heroes. He acquired the nickname Dutch because of his father's joking remark that he looked like a fat little Dutchman as a baby. Reagan carried the name proudly. It made him feel distinctive, a little bit theatrical. Despite the instability, his childhood was not unhappy. He loved small-town life, the rituals of local churches, the rhythms of community gatherings, and the sense that neighbors mattered. Yet there were moments of darkness. Jack's alcoholism haunted the family. Reagan later recalled coming home as a boy to find his father passed out in the snow outside the house, his breath steaming in the cold, his face ashen. Reagan dragged him inside. The memory, he said, was one of the few times he felt fear and shame toward a parent. But rather than embitter him, it taught him something about human frailty and the need for compassion. At Dixon High School, Reagan became popular, a lifeguard at the Rock River who prided himself on rescuing dozens of swimmers, a football player, a student body leader. He was not the star athlete. He was the guy who showed up early, stayed late, and worked harder than anyone else. His talent for public speaking emerged early. Teachers remembered him as earnest, humorous, and always prepared. College was the next step. Reagan enrolled at Eureka College, a small Christian school in Illinois. He studied economics and sociology, acted in plays, led protests against budget cuts, and discovered that he loved being on stage. He was not a brilliant student, but he was a tireless participant in campus life. The theater, especially, gave him a sense of identity. It taught him timing, voice control, emotional projection, and perhaps most significantly, the ability to embody a character and make an audience believe in him. After graduation in 1932, in the depths of the Depression, he found his first job in an unlikely place, radio. He became a sports announcer for stations in Davenport and Des Moines, describing baseball games from Telegraph reports with such vividness that listeners thought he was calling the action live from the ballpark. His gift for narrative, for turning fragments into coherent drama, was unmistakable. It would serve him for the rest of his life. Hollywood came next. In 1937, while covering baseball spring training in California, Reagan took a screen test at Warner Brothers. He was signed almost immediately. His looks, clean-cut, all-American, fit perfectly into the studio system's demand for wholesome young actors. He made dozens of films, often in supporting roles, sometimes as the affable best friend or earnest young officer. His most famous early performance came in 1940 in Newt Rockne, All-American, where he played the doomed football hero George Gipp, delivering the line that followed him throughout his career, "Win one for the Gipper." The phrase became shorthand for Reagan's appeal, sentimental, patriotic, idealistic. During World War II, poor eyesight kept him from combat service, but he joined the Army Air Force's first motion picture unit, making training films for pilots. It was not glamorous work, but it kept him connected to the war effort and introduced him to the complexity of bureaucratic organizations, knowledge he would come to draw on in Washington. After the war, Reagan's career shifted. The studio system was changing. Roles became harder to find. But Reagan discovered another talent, leadership within the Screen Actors Guild. He served as SAG president for multiple terms, navigating internal politics, confronting communist influence in Hollywood unions, and building relationships that would later become essential in his political career. Some of his actions during that period remain controversial, especially his cooperation with the FBI in identifying suspected communist sympathizers. But in Reagan's mind, he was defending artistic freedom from ideological coercion. His personal life underwent its own transformation. His first marriage, to actress Jane Wyman, ended in divorce, something that pained him and shook his confidence. But in 1952, he married Nancy Davis, a union that became one of the most enduring and publicly affectionate partnerships in presidential history. Nancy Reagan was fiercely protective, often criticized for her influence, but to Reagan, she was essential, his emotional anchor, his closest advisor, the person who believed in him absolutely. By the 1950s, Reagan's career moved into television. He hosted General Electric Theater, touring GE plants across the country and giving speeches to employees. What began as corporate PR turned Reagan into a skillful political orator. He spoke of individualism, free enterprise, limited government, and American exceptionalism. Crowds loved him. Executives noticed. And Reagan discovered his voice. By the early 1960s, he had become a committed conservative, alienated from the rising liberalism of the Democratic Party he had once supported. The catalyst was Barry Goldwater's 1964 presidential campaign. Reagan delivered a televised speech on Goldwater's behalf, titled A Time for Choosing.
It was electrifying.
Millions heard him for the first time. Donations poured in. Republican leaders saw what Hollywood producers had once seen: charisma, clarity, and a powerful ability to connect with ordinary people. 2 years later, Reagan ran for governor of California. Critics mocked him as a lightweight actor. Supporters hailed him as a new kind of conservative reformer. He won in a landslide. As governor, he confronted student protests, budget battles, and welfare reform. He raised taxes when necessary, something modern conservatives sometimes forget, and negotiated with Democrats, including the formidable Assembly Speaker Willie Brown. The governorship taught Reagan pragmatism. Ideology mattered, but governing required compromise. Twice, Reagan ran for president and lost, first in 1968, then in 1976 against Gerald Ford. But his influence grew. By 1980, in the aftermath of recession, inflation, and the Iran hostage crisis, Reagan's moment had arrived. He won the Republican nomination and faced President Carter in a bitter campaign. His optimism, "Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?" cut through the gloom of the era. He won the election decisively. Reagan entered office with a bold agenda: reduce the size of government, cut taxes, rebuild the military, confront the Soviet Union, and restore faith in America. His economic program, Reaganomics, combined tax cuts, deregulation, and tighter monetary policy under Federal Reserve Chairman Paul Volcker. Inflation fell sharply. Unemployment rose, then dropped. Economists still debate the long-term effects, but for millions, the psychological shift was real. The country felt like it was climbing out of a pit. Reagan's presidency was shaped by dramatic events. Just 69 days into his first term, he was shot by John Hinckley Jr. outside the Washington Hilton. In the emergency room, near death, Reagan joked to his doctors, I hope you're all Republicans. The humor was pure Reagan, deflecting fear with warmth. His recovery boosted his popularity and deepened the public's affection for him. Foreign policy became the arena where Reagan's legacy took on global significance. He entered office convinced that the Soviet Union was expansionist and morally bankrupt. He increased defense spending, deployed intermediate-range missiles in Europe, and oversaw covert actions against communist movements worldwide. His rhetoric was stark. He called the USSR an evil empire, but it resonated with those who believed the Cold War required moral clarity. Yet Reagan was not simply a hawk. When Mikhail Gorbachev emerged as Soviet leader in 1985, Reagan sensed an opportunity. Their summits in Geneva, Reykjavik, Washington, and Moscow were historic. At Reykjavik, they nearly agreed to abolish nuclear weapons entirely, a breathtaking possibility that collapsed at the last moment over disagreements about missile defense. Even so, the negotiations birthed the INF Treaty, the first agreement to eliminate an entire class of nuclear weapons. Reagan's relationship with Gorbachev helped thaw the Cold War and pave the way for the Soviet Union's eventual collapse. His presidency also witnessed profound tragedies. The AIDS crisis devastated communities while his administration responded slowly and inadequately. Critics argued that Reagan's ideological blinders and political caution cost lives. The war on drugs escalated under his watch, creating policies that disproportionately harmed communities of color. In foreign policy, the Iran-Contra affair, an illegal scheme in which senior officials sold weapons to Iran and diverted funds to Nicaraguan rebels, nearly crippled his presidency. Reagan claimed he had not known about the diversion of funds. Investigators concluded he should have exercised far more oversight. Yet despite these failures, Reagan remained personally popular. His communication gifts were unmatched. He could deliver complex ideas in simple terms. He could inspire without sounding artificial. In moments of national grief, such as after the Challenger disaster in 1986, his words brought comfort and dignity. By the end of his presidency, the country had changed. The economy had grown. Inflation was controlled. The Cold War was thawing. Critics argued that inequality had increased, deficits had ballooned, and social programs had been weakened. Supporters claimed he restored American pride and trust in the presidency. He left office in 1989 with high approval ratings. In retirement, Reagan retreated from public life. In 1994, he announced in a heartbreaking letter that he had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. He lived quietly in California, cared for by Nancy, until his death in 2004. His presidential library in Simi Valley became a place of pilgrimage for those who believed Reagan had saved the country from decline. Ronald Reagan remains a towering and polarizing figure. For some, he represents renewal, the triumph of American spirit, the end of Cold War fear, the revival of enterprise and patriotism. For others, he represents the beginning of rising inequality, deregulation excesses, and a political style that simplified complex realities. But no one doubts his impact. He reshaped the conservative movement, the Republican Party, and the global order. And at the heart of it all was that smile, that voice, that uncanny ability to make Americans feel like they were part of something noble and enduring. Ronald Reagan, the actor who became president, stands as proof that leadership is as much about narrative and belief as it is about policy. He offered a story of America that millions wanted, needed to hear. Whether that story masked contradictions or illuminated a deeper truth is for listeners to decide. But its power is undeniable, and its echo still shapes American politics today.